Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Andre Kleiner's online. Hey, Andre.
Hey, Fred. Hey. Happy holidays. Hey,
happy holidays. Yeah, we're recording this during what is supposed to be a break, but I think both of our schedules keep us pretty busy, irregardless of that. And I believe, Andre, this is going to come out early February. We're getting a little bit of a backlog, which is good.
Okay. It
gives us a little buffer. so hopefully we saw each other at RAMS. We both had a great time. We met a bunch of listeners. And we should mention that if you didn't make it to the RAMS conference and had a chance to sit down and talk with us, please let us know what you would like to talk about. You know, give us a shout at reliability.fm. You can find ways to get in touch with us and let us know what topics or questions you have, and we'd love to talk about those on the show. And so, Andre, I mean, so hopefully the break went well, the travel to RAMS all went well. Now, shifting tense again to looking to the future as when we're recording it. So what have you been working on lately?
A lot of different things. But one thing I think which could work as a good topic for this discussion is high temp endurance test. One of the products we're developing is power electronics. It's basically electronics for hybrid and electric vehicles, and it's basically comparing to our traditional, what we call traditional electronics like radios or engine controllers. This is a totally different animal.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if we're talking about chargers, battery chargers, like you drive electric vehicle and you get home, you plug it in and basically it's running the whole night. So now instead of our expected 8,000 to 12,000 hours of operation per lifetime, we're talking about 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 hours of operation,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously creates a challenge.
Well, one of the and you're talking about the it's not just the charger itself, the one that sits in the garage or the parking lot. It's also the components inside the vehicle that convert that
right.
electricity and control the flow of electrons and stuff to the battery and that the charger piece. And think about, it's not just overnight, right? I've been to plenty of businesses now. I have a whole row of chargers. So people come in from their morning commute and they plug in and it sits there for half a day or all day. So it's.
Yeah, that's correct. And also there's electronics, even if it's an inverter or converter, if it's connected to a charger, it's also part of that unit is operating when you're charging.
Well, there's like my car is a hybrid, and I won't tell you what brand because I know you're in the Detroit area. And you know, when I'm coasting, when I'm coming down a hill or doing whatever, it charges the battery. So even when I'm driving, it's charging.
Yeah, absolutely. When first we kind of faced that problem, we had no idea what's going to happen after, let's say, 20,000 hours, because tell you the truth, we didn't have any experience with this type of long-term operation.
Mm-hmm.
So we were collecting some data from people who might have this kind of experience, like servers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those
mm-hmm.
operate 24/7, but at the same time, they don't experience this kind of environment.
No, the range of environments is completely different. Yeah, you don't put a high-end server for your banks or for eBay in your car and drive it around over rough roads. No, you just don't do that. No. But you're talking about, and it's also, you mentioned radios and engine controllers. Those are typically lower voltages, digital type circuits. So you're now talking power electronics, which is a really a different game altogether.
Oh yeah, yeah. And high temp endurance became one of the key tests where, like, for what we call conventional automotive electronics, like radios and controllers, temperature cycling was basically the key test. And mm-hmm. I mean, obviously we doing all the other tests, but this was the main test, which was producing most of the failures and triggering design changes. But with power electronics, high temp endurance became another key test.
Okay. And you're now in the silicon industry, the IC industry, they often talk about high temperature over life, HTOL, and there's a standard for that. And I'm sure the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers, has standards for high temperature endurance testing. But those may not be aimed at the type of electronics you're dealing with.
No. But the main thing is it seemed like it's becoming a much longer test, and we were trying to make some kind of estimate. Okay, what do we expect from that electronics? And we ended up running a test which was 1 year long at elevated temperature, just to assess this the capability of components, ICs, and our main concern was electrolytic capacitors. Mm-hmm. But not only electrolytic capacitor, but seemed like this was the kind of the main expected failure mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a good thing to point at is the caps. they're not a good component for a lot of circumstances, but you need them for power electronics. You need that capacitance.
Yeah, because they can take a lot of power.
That's right.
That's for sure.
So, I mean, where do you start? I mean, there's the way we've been testing it. And I think what you've mentioned is that, like, well, we're not sure if we're going to triple or quadruple the duration and just run the test longer. Is that still appropriate? You know, is it going to give us a different creation? But then you mentioned Arrhenius acceleration factors. Do you guys know, you know, without giving away any trade secrets, what the activation energy is for the failure mechanisms you're interested in?
Well, I mean, activation energy is almost like a separate topic of discussion because, if you're familiar with Arrhenius model, it's exponential model, and this EA, what's called activation energy, extremely important because the whole model is very sensitive to the value of activation energy. And usually those values are somewhere like between 0.2 and I'd say 1.0 electron volts. But even going from, like, let's say 0.4 to 0.5 will make a difference. That's how sensitive this model is. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is, like, if you look at the existing tables for activation energies, most of those numbers were obtained like in the 80s or early 90s. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen too much of new testing or new researches. So those numbers, people kind of keep using and reusing them. And we don't, tell the truth, we don't really know how accurate those numbers are anymore.
That's
the best we can work with.
Well, it's a start. I mean, for test planning, oftentimes you may not know, right? It's a new application. It's a new set of chemicals that are in it. Different kinds of capacitors are being used. But it's the discipline to say, well, you know, here's where we're going to start, but we're going to run the test to failure now and back calculate out the activation energy. Or better, just go to your friendly chemist shop and ask them to run the experiments to determine the activation energies. But like you said, though, is that it's a key factor, and it goes into, well, how do I interpret, say you run the test for 8,000 hours, right? You mentioned you were running a test for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does 8,000 hours translate to 80,000 hours? Did you get a 10x acceleration factor?
About, That's what we assume, because again, another problem with all those tables is if you don't know what's your failure mechanism, what's your expected failure mechanism, what you're supposed to do is assume the worst, meaning the lowest activation energy.
Which is almost none.
Yeah, which is almost none, and that would give you pretty much zero acceleration factor. So you need to kind of, make some kind of assumptions here. But I mean, the good thing what came out of our experiments is basically we didn't discover any fall off the cliff, so to speak.
You didn't have any batteries explode or catch fire.
No.
That's good.
And, I mean, we had a couple of failures, but they were actually not necessarily triggered by high temperature. So, so I mean, we got, after completing this set of experiments, we got a lot more confidence in our ability of those products to survive. But again, this whole kind of high temp endurance activation energy issue remains. What do we use? When do we use that model? And what are the best values to use?
Well, are you continuing to run the test? Were you able to keep the setup running?
Well, with this set of experiments was over because we were tying up a chamber for like 1 year, and at some point we were told, "Okay, stop! You need to stop."
He'll chase you out of there. Yeah,
you can't do it forever. And it's like 20 years of experiments. But like I said, we've learned enough, and I think based on the model we used, it was equivalent to about, I think 60,000 hours.
Okay. So you're getting actually pretty close though to what I call the Microsoft model, and it's meant as a joke because I know they actually do a lot of testing of their operating systems before they send it out. But the impression I use that joke about is that, well, you're not going to know if your assumptions are correct until 5, 10, 15 years into use with your customers reporting on problems. So are you going to continue to look for things that to improve that model and use that data set with a new interpretation?
Basically we plugged in the loop of warranty field returns, warranty and field returns, and we get a lot of our products back from the field, and with some of the customers, like, you know, Hyundai, for example, they have 10-year warranties. So now we getting we have an ability to look much further into life of a product, because I mean, before it was like 3 years, and after that you get very little. Now all the warranties are getting longer and longer, even other manufacturers. Yeah, like you have powertrain 5-6 years,
Well, I'm curious. I mean, the power electronics and the hybrid vehicles, I don't remember when they first came out, the first generation Priuses and stuff like that. That was 10 years or more ago, wasn't it?
Probably. Actually, in the early 90s, GM was working on electric vehicles.
Yeah, EV1. I saw one of those. Those are cool cars. They were like, they looked like the Teslas. They were kind of a streamlined looking body and pretty slick looking. And they had huge, they demoed them in our parking lot, and a couple guys got to drive them, and they were really liked them. But then it just went away. I never heard anything more about them.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that they basically stopped that development and decided that the EVs are not the way to go. And now we know if they continue that, they would be way ahead of everybody else.
That's right.
Yeah.
But the little bit of work I've done with electric vehicles, and it's in that power conversion piece, there's electrolytic capacitors, because you need to be able to deal with the amount of power that's involved. And it treats the capacitors and the rest of the electronics. So current surges and current flow and heating of these power electronics, the ASICs and the switching devices like IGBTs, even the circuit board, the amount of copper you got to put on things is much different than for digital circuits. But all of that goes into saying, is this are we doing the right test to evaluate this? So do you also include, you know, things like physics of failure type modeling or finite element analysis or failure modes and effects analysis? How do you get to the point where you say, well, we do need to do this high temperature test?
Well, I mean, you obviously use all those tools. So, yeah, FEA is great in physics of failure, but again, they all based on some kind of assumptions and some kind of analytics. And, mm-hmm. and test is your ultimate, basically, ultimate way to see if your product will survive and do what you expect it to do.
Yeah, and you mentioned before is that Detroit's not taking a fleet of vehicles and driving them around the country for a year to get all that test data.
So they used to, but not anymore.
And then so in the lab is kind of your last step to say, did we make the right sets of assumptions? But now you mentioned it right at the start is that this electronics that you're dealing with gets used. It's not like the radio where I use it during my commute. You know, depending on where you live, it might be an hour a day or 2 hours a day and running a few errands. So the car doesn't actually run all that often. Whereas being plugged in, you've energized those circuits and now they're getting stressed and they're at temperature. And so things like diffusion and corrosion and electromigration, all of those temperature-related failure mechanisms and others can come into play. So,
yeah, and that was exactly the concern. The good news with that was that when you plug in your battery charger and it operates through the night, it actually doesn't run the same way for like 10, 12 hours.
Right.
And usually kind of you see the peak for about 2-3 hours and then it kind of drops. I mean, as far as voltage.
It says the batteries, you know, we're at capacity. So we're plugged in, but we're not actively charging. But but parts of the circuit, the control circuitry still is
operating.
Being used.
Yeah, that's no right. question about it. And like I said, this was a big concern when we started developing those products. And like I said, we feel a lot better about them now, but again, the test flow when you do validation of those products now, our high temp endurance test is much longer than what we used to have. And I mean, your typical high temp endurance test for conventional electronics is about 1,000 hours, which takes you about month and a half. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1 month is about 700 hours. Now we talking about 3,000 hours, and sometimes the problem is you have a coolant, like a liquid cooling, which in many cases would not let you actually increase the temperature for the testing purposes. So
that's
you're
right.
not getting that much of an acceleration doing those products. So you need to kind of be creative, like reduce the cooling rate, or in some cases turn off the cooling, but at the same time then design engineers would jump all over you screaming that you cannot do that because you're going to kill the circuit.
Well, yeah, and then we're back in the discussion. Well, we're accelerating the failure mechanisms. We need to get to that temperature. Yes, it's above the spec. Yeah, I know I've had that discussion so many times. But I think the basic message, though, Andre, is that you might have had a standard high temperature test that you've run for years, and then there is something in this going to these power electronics, and particularly the increase in duration, it's not just as simple as just run the old test more often, longer. It's what's different about how it fails? And then looking like you were talking about it, I agree, it's probably a whole nother episode just on the Arrhenius acceleration factors, the activation energy. But it's, you got to step back. And I think, To be honest, Andre, I think you should do that with every time you run a test, even if it's the same product on the same, application, everything else, because the way customers use products continues to change. The material sets and the construction of our electronics continues to change. There's from year to year, there are subtle changes. And so running the same test we've been running since the 80s, really doesn't make a whole lot of sense a lot of times.
Yeah, and especially using the activation energies obtained in the 80s and early 90s.
That's true. Yeah, that's probably a topic for a whole nother discussion as well. How do you get the activation energy? And so maybe that'll be a good topic to spark some grad students to go start doing some research for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, so I think that's the idea is that I think the basic message is, you know, as things change, and it's not just the material set you're using, but the environment that it's being used in and I would argue that it's anytime you run a test is what does it really mean? How are you going to interpret this thing? And so high temperature over life. Yeah. Sometimes it really does take a long time to simulate, you know, 10 years worth of operating time. Unfortunately, Andre, I think sounds like you're not going to really know for another 10 years or so if that test was accurate to what you expect the actual failures to be.
No, and that's kind of the soft part of reliability science. It's like I like to say that there's no Ohm's law in reliability. So there's a lot of kind of intuition and in your past experience and guesswork. One thing though with the automotive industry, some of the automakers, they actually put this activation energy in their requirements. Mm-hmm. Like one of the pretty well-known European automakers, they just put activation energy equals to 0.45.
Interesting.
What you have to use, like for when you're calculating the time for your high temp endurance test, that's what you have to use according to them.
Well, that works great if that applies to, you know, the failure. Because I saw that same kind of policy in the router and switch business, you know, the server telecommunications type side of the business, is they required an activation energy of 0.9.
Oh, wow. That's pretty aggressive.
Yeah. And I said, you know,
0.45 is pretty, I'd say,
pretty conservative.
Pessimistic.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we got plenty of time. It's not going to last. I says, wait a second, we're dealing with this mechanism on this new ASIC that we know has an activation energy of between 0.2 and 0.4. And if we have to design the test using 0.9, that's just not going to work and get the answers you were expecting to get.
And yeah, you just end up with a pretty short test, at least much shorter than you would have if you actually use the correct values.
That's right. So we run a bunch of units, they pass. We don't really learn what we think we're learning. And I think that's the real danger of it, is that's why I advocate, think through it. Make sure you can interpret the test appropriately for what you're testing for. And so that's key. Anyway, let's plan. I'll add it to our list and we'll look for any of our listeners to, you know, with how they approach this. How do they deal with when the environment changes? What's your process? Or if you have any questions, let us know. But I think the Arrhenius equation is probably activation energy. In determining activation energy is probably going to be a whole other topic. So we'll see if anybody chimes in and has some good ideas there for us.
Yeah. One thing about activation energy, again, for listeners to know, if you were a chemistry major, you probably assume that activation energy is that little energy requires, which electron requires to basically kind of hump, to go over the hump.
Right, to either attach or break a bond.
To start a reaction. But in reality, what we call activation energy in reliability is not really activation energies. Those are just numbers obtained from testing. And I think JEDEC, which is one of the electronic standards, actually used EAA. I think it stands for assumed activation energy.
Yeah, that's clever. That's good.
Where they, kind of emphasizing this is not activation energy you can obtain from, I don't know, some chemical testing or some chemistry knowledge about material. It's just something different.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I I do think it, I think we could keep going for another half hour if we about just that one number, because it is really, really important. But with that, Andre, hopefully the test you did and the redesign and interpretation of it, it's going to pan out, and that your the autos that these go into will last beyond your expectations. So that,
like I said, we feel a lot better now about this long hours of operation than we did, like, let's say 2-3 years ago.
That's right. Yeah. I imagine if they all failed at 30,000 hours equivalent, you would have like, there's a problem. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. And Andre, we'll see what the listeners think about this and this kind of the next topic.
Okay, and thank you, Fred, for doing this.
All right. Thanks, Andre.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.